The final presenter for this afternoon's session is Dr. Tatiana Balakova. She's an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center, and she's also the co-director of the interdisciplinary training program in child abuse and neglect. She has served as an advisor for the World Health Organization, consultant for national and international organizations, and principal investigator on federally funded studies. Dr. Balakova's research interests include child maltreatment, substance abuse, and prevention of alcohol-exposed pregnancies and HIV transmission in women. So we welcome Dr. Balakova.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming to the session. I know it's afternoon and this is the last session. And we're actually coming to intersection between family planning, contraception use, and alcohol consumption. We don't have any financial interest related, commercial interest related to the study, and I represent a large group of international researchers from different disciplines, public health, pediatrics, psychology, community health, and some other disciplines who conducted this work, very important work for Russia. We have several universities involved from US, from Russia, and also collaborators from other countries. And I'm very happy to introduce Dr. Larisa Tsvetkova, who is here. Dr. Tsvetkova is Vice President of St. Petersburg State University in Russia, and she also serves as co-PI on this study from Russian side. Alcohol and pregnancy should not mix, we know it. Alcohol used during pregnancy is a leading preventable cause of birth defects and developmental disabilities. And it's known that alcohol used during pregnancy may cause fetal alcohol syndrome, which is leading for preventable mental retardation in US and other countries around the world. We know that FAS is associated with very significant brain damage. You can see brain of child with FAS and normal of the same age child's brain. And we also know that unfortunately there is no cure at this time for this condition, and this is a lifelong condition which caused by maternal drinking during pregnancy. In addition to FAS, which is the most significant complication, many people have fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, which is not as significant, it's more difficult to see, but they really affect children and adults' function and their outcomes in life. FAS completely preventable. This is positive things. We know that if women drink during pregnancy, child may have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, but if they don't drink during pregnancy, child would never have fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, so this is a very good sign for us. It's complicated by the fact that only 50% of pregnancies planned, which is a surprise for me, even in the US, it's 50% of pregnancies, and women usually don't know until about 6 weeks of gestation that they're pregnant. A research in alcohol field shows that women continue to drink on the same levels until they recognize pregnancy usually. So this is why preconceptional approach is recommended to prevent fetal alcohol syndrome. We conduct work in Russia. Why in Russia? Because Russia is known by very high level of alcohol consumption. And this is a map which has been created by World Health Organization. And you can see this is Russia. And there is no really, in Western Europe, there is no really other countries in the world which would have the same alcohol consumption level. Also in Russia, there is an increasing number of young people who drink at least, and also women, they change pattern of drinking and more women drink at risk. So we knew this, we really didn't know anything else except the fact that women drink in Russia. And we thought really pregnant women drink in Russia also. And so we really wanted to work with pregnant women. This was our first idea. But I'm really glad that we did not decide to do right away what we thought. We didn't base on this assumption our work. And we began study with first phase, which was formative research. So after first phase, we did this other phases. Now we're in phase number 3, and in next 10 minutes, I should explain you 10 years of research. So I will do this very briefly, and we'll be very brief, so I will try to explain you. We selected two different sites for research. One is urban areas, St. Petersburg City, And you know, it's more than 5 million population, very typical metropolitan area. And second site is Nizhny Novgorod region. It's regional, we included regional clinics, small cities, and very rural areas. You can see these pictures which demonstrate this. So at first phase, we decided we need to know why women drink, if they drink, we need to know what they know, and we need to know what physicians know. Very briefly, we conducted focus groups and we conducted also a survey. You can see about 900 participants we had, women physicians, OBGYN physicians, and pediatricians in these two different regions. As a result, we learned that, yes, women drink, very significant women. More than 90% of women report drinking at least some during the last 12 months, including pregnant women, but we can see there is a very significant difference between women who drink when they are aware about pregnancy. Significant numbers of women reduce drinking significantly. Another fact is women who may become pregnant, which means they sexually active, but they don't use contraception consistently. They drink at the same level. And if women who want to get pregnant, they reported that they were trying to conceive, they continue to drink on the same level. More concerning fact that women in Russia really changed their drinking behaviors recently, and many women drink, have binge drinking, which is, you probably know, it's drinking four or more drinks during about 2 hours period. So we can see very significant numbers. 77% of women in Nizhny Novgorod region reported binge drinking. And you can see in St. Petersburg also significant number. And very concerning, binge drinking is particularly harmful is for fetuses. So we can see that women who might become pregnant or trying to conceive reported binge drinking on the same level. So we're not surprised now why we had this idea that probably many children exposed to alcohol in Russia prenatally, and we know this from adoption studies, for example, about effects of fetal alcohol syndrome on adoption from Eastern Europe and from Russia. So we didn't really know much about family planning. We did assessment in St. Petersburg. We found that 9% of women want to get pregnant, but additional 36% of women don't contracept well. We also found that in Nizhny Novgorod region, this number is even higher. More than 50% of women, they may become pregnant even if they don't really want and plan pregnancy. We know that pregnancy possibility together with risky drinking cause alcohol-exposed pregnancies. So when we look at our data, we found that more than 30% women in St. Petersburg and more than 50% women in Nizhny Novgorod region were at risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancies based on the alcohol consumption and contraception use. If we compare this with data from U.S., you can see in U.S. in general population, 2% of women at risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancies. So it's very significant numbers of women in Russia who are at risk. So based on these results, we really realized that these women should be our target group. Women who are not currently pregnant, but who drink at risk level and don't use contraception consistently. Also, we found that physicians, based on reports by women and also based on reports by physicians, they would be the most trustful source of information about alcohol use and pregnancy and other health behaviors during pregnancy in Russia. And also physicians reported that they were willing to do this. They understood importance and they were willing to provide services for women. So we really came to conclusion that intervention, brief intervention by physicians would be the most effective for prevention for these purposes. But we also found that no information available in Russia. It was 2004, no educational brochures for women, no training for physicians. So we really didn't have another choice. So next step was to develop these materials and evaluate these materials in educational trials. So again, we conducted focus groups and we also conducted survey. We developed information brochures for women based on results from focus groups. We found what women wanted to see in brochures and what information would be important for them. And we evaluated these brochures in educational trials. We also reviewed curricula for medical education in Russia to identify what would be the best format to provide this information in Russia. We also found that no information available again, and we used US and Canada-based materials to adapt these materials for use for professionals in Russia. We trained trainers, Russian faculty, and the faculty conducted randomized educational trials at continuing medical education courses so we could see how this information can change the attitudes, knowledge in the practice. So as a result, we could see that brochures were effective in changing women's knowledge and even their attitudes, but didn't change their behavior very much. We found that physicians who participated in continuing education and learned about this FAS improved skills significantly, both pediatricians and OBGYN physicians. And also the attitudes were changed and the willingness to use this information in their practice improved. So we next step was we decided to evaluate. We really need to know if this intervention can be effective in improving women's contraception use and reducing alcohol consumption. So again, we conducted study. We conducted randomized clinical trial, and we screened more than 1,000 women, more than 700 enrolled. 100% of these women were at risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancies. All of them were drinking at risk, and all of them were not contracepting well. So we conducted a study at 20 OBGYN clinics and did follow-ups. Our intervention which we used was based on two evidence-based models which we developed in the U.S. One was developed based on typical brief physician intervention, and second was Project Choices, which was CDC-funded study, which developed intervention, I think, very interesting. Basically, this intervention shows that you can reduce risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancies by two ways. One way would be improved contraception, and second way would be to reduce drinking. And this is a personal choice, and each woman can decide what would be her goal. She can decide what way she can reduce risk for alcohol exposure for her child. So we call this intervention dial focus brief physician intervention. It was very brief, incorporated in physicians' OBGYN clinics visits. As a result of this intervention, what we found that, as you remember, 100% of women were not using contraception effectively, and you can see at 3 months, 50% of women were using contraception well. And this was stable during 6 months and 12 months follow-up. During, for alcohol consumption, we had the same result. Majority of women improved significantly how they were drinking and reduced drinking significantly. And our main outcome, if you remember, 100% of these women were at risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancies. We found that more than 70% of women were not at risk as a result of contraception, but also in control group also. And this was very stable result. You can see 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, majority of women were not at risk, which is a very promising result for us. So what we found that first of all, OBGYN physicians can do this intervention. Second, we found that results very promising for prevention, very brief intervention is promising. Even providing feedback during assessment was promising for prevention. This was first randomized clinical trial. As a result of work of our group, I can tell that we really can see how awareness have been raising in Russia. We developed websites to disseminate information, and majority, we had more than 25,000 visitors during several years. And we can see if in 2005, only one information about FAS was available on website in Russian language. Now there are more than 12,000 sources of information. And first coordination council was established in Moscow last year, which is very important for improving prevention in Russia. And also international organizations now provide support. There are several implications for public health which I want to emphasize. FAS is a major problem in Russia, but not just in Russia, because it clearly affects people around the world, including adoptive parents everywhere. And prevention, this prevention model is very, very promising, so we really can provide very effective results with limited information. And women professionals ready to participate, and international communities ready to support this. And very last conclusion which I want to tell, what we found that we really cannot begin to do anything in any country before doing formative assessment, before finding information very specifically what information needed, what can be effective, what can be promising. And only based on this, we can really transfer knowledge from other countries to this country. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Dr. Bach, for an excellent presentation. We will now open it up for questions and answers. I would request you to speak loudly and clearly because all the questions and answers are being recorded. Please direct your questions to any one of them. But before we do that, I do want to give a round of applause to all the speakers who did a fantastic job. Just to remind you where your questions are going, Dana Alsari, if you want to wave. Yeah. And she spoke about women in Ethiopia. Hilary Swan. She spoke about women in Nigeria. Sarah spoke about Ethiopia. And Jamie spoke about Afghanistan. And then Dr. Balkova spoke about Russia. So please direct your questions. And I would request the speakers to please repeat the questions, so that it gets recorded over here. If you want to step up here, please do so. Yes, and let me just mention one thing, that if I don't catch your eye when you raise your hand, I apologize for that. And if you wave, it is better. And if I still don't catch it, wave both hands. I'll definitely catch you. Okay, so please.
That we actually have done, it's just a proposed policy initiative, but the way in which we propose become engaged is primarily through the condom use. I mean, that would affect them most directly.
Thank you.
So engaging men would primarily take place by encouraging them to utilize contraception. Culturally and traditionally, women are the ones who are the decision makers, and the method of contraception used that's utilized within the couple, and it's kind of the female's responsibility and domain to do so. It's not really, it's just a cultural thing. It's not really something that's prevalent in other countries, I think. And condoms are, it's really interesting. They're just not widely known about. So it's primarily due to condom use. And then also, I think another thing that we talked about was going out to the workplace to address men's needs as well.